All right. So I'm going to talk about twisted symmetry in tensor network states and how they're connected to topological order. And well, first of all, I'd like to thank Xiaogang and Gefrey for putting together this workshop. And well, actually, with this audience, I hardly need to introduce exotic phases of matter. I want to show one possible way of organizing them in a chart. I'm sure there are other ways. And since the conference is about entanglement, I thought it would be a good idea to use entanglement as one axis. So this goes like from short-range entanglement to a bit longer-range entanglement. And on the other hand, you can ask the question, how much symmetry is in your system, and to what extent is this symmetry obeyed by your system? So on the short range and no symmetry side, we have trivial states, which are actually just product states. If we go up a little bit and say, well, our Hamiltonian has a symmetry, but maybe the ground state doesn't, then we're in the realm of symmetry breaking, just ordinary Landau phases. And then recently, it had been discovered that there are also symmetry protected phases, where the Hamiltonian has a symmetry and the ground states actually do respect that symmetry as well. If we go back, excuse me, if we go back to the case where there is no symmetry at all, but this time we go to long-range entanglement, then there are phases which are intrinsically topologically ordered. And then, of course, we can combine the two properties. We can have long-range entanglement and also put a symmetry on top of it, and we'll end up with symmetry-enriched topological phases. For example, here, for the symmetry-protected topological phases, there we would find topological insulators, or this construction based on cohomology. Here we would find fractional quantum Hall physics, chiral spin liquids, Z2 spin liquids. And here you would find things like symmetry fractionalization and also a recent construction based on group cohomology. So this chart actually is used to tell you that my talk will be about intrinsically topologically ordered phases. And in particular, I want to answer a particular question. And the setup is the following. So suppose you have a spin system, and you describe the spin system using a tensor network state. So what you would do is you would take tensors which have a physical index, i.e. J and K, that would describe the spins of your physical system. And these tensors would be stitched together using virtual indices that you sum over. And then...
Well, sorry, I'm still thinking about the previous slide, actually. Why is there nothing in between these two right things? Like the analog of Landau's?
Well, yeah, there is. I just didn't put it there. I think it's... Well, I mean, trivially you could just take a bilayer system. One of them is symmetry breaking, and the other one has intrinsic topological order, for example. And I think there is even another thing. There's this E8 state. I think you would probably put it somewhere here. I mean, because it has no symmetry, but it's not trivial, and it's not topologically ordered in the usual sense. So this is why I say it's possibly incomplete and just one way of putting together this chart. Okay, so let's return to that question. All right, so we have a tensor network state, and let's put it on the torus because we want to study topology. So then this is actually just, as you know, a particular expression for the wave function of such a state. And well, just for convenience so that you see it for later, as a technical detail, I will just stitch the tensors together in a slightly different way. So I'll stitch them together around the vertices where those tensors meet. And then the question, the ultimate question is this. Given such a local tensor, can we characterize the topological order of the resulting state only knowing the properties of those local tensors? And that's actually a very formidable question, to me anyway. So I'm happy to attack a much more modest problem, which is to find new sufficient conditions on those local tensors to get topological order in two dimensions. And it turns out the answer is symmetry, but just what kind of symmetry? So, it is not physical symmetry, because I said I'm in this line of no physical symmetry. And actually, one can make this a little bit more precise by saying the following. So, suppose you have a system with a gapped Hamiltonian, which can be frustration-free. And now suppose that we add to this Hamiltonian a bounded local perturbation, which is otherwise completely arbitrary. It doesn't need to respect any sort of symmetry. And then there's a beautiful range of results by Ravi, Hastings, Michalakis, and Pitel. And they say, they prove that by doing so, you cannot close the gap of this Hamiltonian. So in particular, if that Hamiltonian had non-trivial topological order, if it had a ground state degeneracy and certain properties of the excitations, behavior under modular transformation, and so on and so forth, this will be capped as long as you do not close the gap. So in particular, if you happen to have a particular Hamiltonian which seems to have a symmetry, then this symmetry must be completely accidental, because you can use an arbitrary small enough perturbation to just get rid of that. And, well, a different story is topological symmetries, as the ones that Meissen was talking about, where you permute, for example, topological charge sectors. But, well, that's a different story. So, so then it's not physical symmetry, but it's virtual symmetry. So what do I mean by that? So suppose we have a tensor. Let's take one of the simplest kind, a triangle tensor, and let's put a so-called branching structure on this tensor, which for our purposes is nothing else but we orient the edges of that tensor in a particular way, which is acyclic. So any orientation is fine as long as these edges do not form a closed cycle. And this is just a particular orientation. And then the rule is when you grow a tensor network and stitch them together, then these edges must match the orientation. And furthermore, the virtual indices that I use to stitch this tensor together with another one, I've duplicated them here. So these are really the same, and those betas and those gammas. And the physical index is this I. Okay, so where is the symmetry? Well, one type of symmetry one can use is, and which has been used by Norbert before, is just a group symmetry. Okay, so I should add that these Greek indices are always group elements of some finite group, whereas all indices that you see in red, the physical indices, they are not associated to any group or anything. They're just indices in a d-dimensional vector space, and that's it. All right. So the symmetry actually consists of a certain symmetry tensors that you add on the virtual level. and you define them simply by group multiplication, and everything else is just zero. All right. Now this explains the D for that finite group that you use as a symmetry. Now, what you can do is you can twist that symmetry. So the twist here means you introduce an omega and over there, and this is a so-called three-co cycle. And it's actually not scary, it's just a bit cumbersome to calculate with. And essentially what this is, it is a function that takes three group elements, gives you your one phase and fulfills consistency conditions. So this is the type of symmetry that you now require, where these tensors actually need to talk to each other and kind of relay information around this circle. Sure.
Does that bring it? Does the fact that you just described change the state?
Yes. Well, it leads to it doesn't change it because in the sense that you require invariance here. But you will get different topological phases if you use omegas from different cohomology classes. I will come to that.
Good question. You will always get non-Harvard phases, right?
Yes. Yes.
Is your two-dimensional system a space latency or space-time latency?
Pardon?
Is a space latency or space-time latency?
Oh, this is space. I don't quite get the question.
Just space, okay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, just space.
Usually, in a spiritual cycle sense, usually this, I'm saying the story is different from the usual space-time latency.
Yes, space, yes, yes, yes. Yeah, and indeed that there is a very close connection. Yes.
Uh-huh. Oliver, I'm a bit confused with the notation. So you have these boxes that are acting on alpha, say?
Yeah.
And then now they are connected to other two boxes?
Right.
Why do you call that index that connects the two boxes alpha as well? Is that...
That's part of the definition.
So that's alpha again?
Yes. Yeah, that's why I said that this tensor kind of needs to tell the next tensor what kind of index.
So it's not like that, it's simple.
Pardon?
It's not like that, it's
simple. Yes. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah.
Yeah, and the right thing is just a phase? Or?
That is just a phase, yeah. It's just a phase.
What's the meaning of incoming and outgoing arrows for the algebras, for these indices?
Well, if you reverse them, then it's the inverse, and you have to do something to that co-cycle. You never need to do that, actually.
So the simple case I can use, we did is omega is a typical cycle then?
Yes. Yes. Okay. And actually, one more thing that I kind of didn't put here is this tensor depends on what kind of edge it kind of is attached to. Right? So in particular, this symmetry tensor depends on the orientation of this edge. And then, so I've just put here one of these orientations, and the other one is a slightly different definition. But you need both of them, and that's why you need this branching structure. Okay, so that's one part of the story. And let me just rephrase this equation in a shorthand way. So as is usual in this tensor network business, you would like to think of this tensor as a linear map from the virtual system, which is all around here, to the physical system. And let's just abbreviate this map by A. And then everything else that on the left-hand side, that's not the tensor itself, but everything, so the ring and the summation over it, let's call it the projection on an invariant subspace. So that is this P omega. Okay, and then what this just says is when we kind of go from the virtual level, so from whatever the other tensors around this one tell us, apply the symmetry, and then go to the physical level. So this is what the left-hand side says, and the requirement is that this is the same as going to the physical level directly.
So it actually is a projection.
Yes. All right, so, excuse me.
So the range of the physical index and the tensor network, are they the same or it has to be different?
So the range is actually connected to the next condition. So I'm going to say that in a second. So the range actually has to be maximal. And you can phrase this in the following way. You can say that you call such a tensor d-omega injective if you can find an almost inverse. Almost means you're only required to invert it on the symmetric subspace. So that, in other words, this means this projection on the symmetric subspace will throw away every non-symmetric boundary. Okay, so it has, well, it throws that away. And then the requirement is equivalent to saying that when you then go from there to the physical level, you do not throw away anything else. Okay, so that that this guy makes the physical subspace equivalent to the symmetric virtual one. Okay, so these are the conditions that we need. And then we can start talking about Hamiltonians and grand state degeneracy and properties of those states. So there is quite a standard construction for tensor networks where you're given a tensor network and you can construct a parent Hamiltonian on top of that. And the way that works is we want to compose that Hamiltonian out of local terms, and those local terms we're going to take to be, say, these three tensors around a given vertex, okay? And what we want to do is we want to look at the local density operator of those A, B, and C regions together, and then we want to construct a Hamiltonian which just annihilates that so that we can be sure that this is a ground state of the Hamiltonian. And, well, the way to do this is you look at the range of from virtual to physical for this entire region, and then you can be sure that the local density operator will be supported on that space. So you just kick it out by projecting on the orthogonal complement of the range of that. Okay, so then this state will certainly be a ground state of the Hamiltonian that you construct. Well, and then you go ahead and you implement a Hamiltonian term for each of those vertices, incorporating all surrounding regions, which are tensors. Okay, so what about ground states? It turns out that, well, when you just close this, remember this is on a torus, you certainly get one ground state, but is that all you get? Well, it turns out no, you get more. And why do you get more? Well, you get more because before you glue this torus together, you can kind of introduce some sort of branch cut. So you can introduce a shift by a group element G if you go like this way over one of the fundamental loops of the torus. And because we twisted the symmetry, well, this kind of branch cut will also be twisted. And these are, in fact, exactly the same tensors that we used in this condition for the triangle. And again, well, everything depends on orientations of those edges, but I suppress them to not clutter the picture. So then you can also do this, of course, in the other direction. And the only new element we get here is kind of this cross tensor here, which depends on how you close in this direction and in that direction. And then, of course, it depends on how you twist at your symmetry. All right.
So why does the omega have to match for the vertical and the horizontal?
The omega has, well, because, yeah, because it, this is the only way it works. Because the omega will turn out to kind of classify the entire phase that you get. So if you start introducing a different omega in different places, then so to speak, you will construct regions with different topological order. So this is why this has to be the same everywhere.
The state is being characterized by a loop and a
cycle. Yes, but a little bit less, and I will come to that. Okay. So, and it has to do with kind of this strange looking word. Okay. So, if we look at the ground state degeneracy, it'll turn out that that we have as many ground states as we have so-called C omega. All right. Yeah. C omega regular pair conjugacy classes. Okay, so let me break it down, what this means. So pair conjugacy means that if you take a ground state which is parameterized by two group elements, and if you simultaneously conjugate both of them, you're gonna get the same state. So you can gloss over that. And then this other thing is really the place where this Coase cycle comes in. So first of all, it means that the two elements have to commute. It kind of makes sense because actually this is some representation of the fundamental group, and well, that is abelian. And then this C omega is basically a condition that you can derive from the Coase cycle omega. And that condition gives you a yes or no answer on each pair of group elements. And only if this gives you a yes answer, then the state that you construct is actually non-zero. And this is strikingly different from the case where this omega is trivial. Because if it is trivial, then everything that you construct this way will be non-zero. So in other words, imagine your group is abelian. Then you would have a ground state degeneracy of exactly g squared if your omega was trivial. But if it's not, then this degeneracy can actually be reduced. And what you get is, at the end of the day, non-abelian anions over an seemingly abelian theory.
But it is still the same as the quantum double, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. All right. So let me touch upon one more thing, which is, well, it seems technical, but it's actually quite important. So there is a distinction between tensors where you go from the virtual to the physical level, just in the way that I described. And well, then let me complete actually this column. So here it turns out that, as I showed you, the parent Hamiltonian will be local terms, and there will be frustration free, not necessarily commuting, which is why, in general, one won't have a gap here. And well, in many cases one will, but in many cases one won't. But still one will have a finite ground state degeneracy. On the other hand, if you require this map that goes from virtual to physical to be a partial isometry, then you can do much more. Then you can actually prove that the Hamiltonian is really, really simple, because then it consists of commuting projectors, then it is trivially gapped. And we also have that exactly ground, the same ground state degeneracy that I showed you on the last slide. But we can do more. So at this point, we can show that this virtual symmetry doesn't depend on a particular omega, but only on its so-called cohomology class. And we get modular SNT matrices. And well, the universality class is that of 2D Dyckerf, well, 3D Dyckerf-Witten topological quantum field theory, or a twisted quantum double. To finish off, well, let me go back one step. Now we see that here we can really prove a lot of things, and not just as much on this side. So can we actually pull some of these results over from this side to that side? And it turns out, yes, one can, but only in a set regime. So the reason why one can do this is the following. So imagine a tensor, and imagine this to be this map from virtual to physical. Now it turns out by a nice observation of Norbert and co-workers that you can always decompose that. Where, well, in my case here, this isometry is actually of this G omega symmetric type. Okay, but really you can do this like for whatever symmetry you have here. And I think it was proved where this omega was trivial. Okay, so this Q is in general a positive matrix. And we would like to get rid of it. Because if we do, then we can get all the nice properties from the right-hand side. Question is, in what cases can we get rid of it? And it turns out one can get rid of it along a gapped adiabatic path for the parent Hamiltonian if this Q is not too far away from 1. And, it's not too far away from 1 because it's actually very, very difficult to prove gaps in two dimensions. So as soon as there is a new result on how to prove a gap in two dimensions, then you can extend this as much as that particular, hopefully, upcoming result will allow you to. And that's actually the last slide. So this is what we had before, and we kind of wanted to bring some of these properties over to a more general setting. Well, and it turns out, if you consider all this almost isometric case, this Q almost 1, then you get all the niceties here, but you also get a slightly more complicated Hamiltonian, which is now no longer commuting, but still gapped, because we came along an adiabatic path. And we still have all these niceties, independent of the particular omega. We get the full modular transformation properties, and we can show from there that it's really Dyckerhoff-Witten and TQ of T. And that's it. You can think of it as some sort of gauge symmetry, yeah.
Like you're starting to give that, I mean, I can build it like it's a wave function of SPT, and then I somehow over the gauge variable, something like that, and I get this wave function.
Yeah, I think that's one way to see it, yeah.
Maybe I try to see this as if you don't add a twist, you get a kind of gauge theory.
Yeah.
If you add a twist, you add a topological term in gauge theory.
Right.
So this is kind of a discrete version to include the topological term in gauge theory.
Yes.
And usually we know how to do that for continuous group, but discrete group is hard. But now we can do for discrete using this way. That's the way I try to look at it.
What's the simplest model for which you need an optical omega?
For Z2, if you take a non-trivial omega, you will get this doubled semion theory.
So you go from the body go to the.
Yeah, you go to a different universality class. So it's connected to this. It is the dual version of this strange easing thing where you have domain walls and where you decorate those domain walls. And what you get is, you get the same particle spectrum as in the Torricot, the same fusion rules and everything, but when you twist a particle around itself by 2 pi, you get a different topological spin. And also the braiding you modify. And for that reason, it is in a different topological phase. That's the simplest thing.
Last question for Julian.
What's the connection you have for this space latest approach to this, space-time latest dimension dark?
So the connection is, you can view it as you take you take the Dyckerk-Witten partition function and you take a time slice, and then you slightly relax the requirements because you kind of distill only this essential virtual symmetry part. So, for example, if your lattice was triangulated, then it's exactly a time slice of Dyckerk-Witten. But you can also take arbitrary tensors. They don't need to have triangle shape. And also Dyckerk-Witten works only precisely at the isometric point. But when you go away from that, then you add local perturbations to it.
But you have like corresponding frequent cycle completions in this space line.
Yeah, so the three co-cycle conditions, they in Dyckerk-Witten, they would be manifested as those Packner moves, and in this case, they serve that the virtual symmetries compose nicely together. This is actually where the three co-cycle condition gets in.
Okay, I think we should stop.